Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcast by me, veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
Let me start by saying that if you hear some funny crackling noises behind me, it's because I'm standing in front of the wood stove. It's spring here in New Hampshire, but it was doggone cold this morning, and there's frost on my car, and I didn't have the furnace on, and I didn't have a fire in the wood stove, and when I came down, I was going to tough it out until the sun rose, but nah, I built a fire instead. The topic of this week's podcast is a study that was making the rounds several weeks ago about dominance aggression, or rather so-called dominance aggression, in dogs and the effectiveness of treatment for it. I use the phrase so-called dominance aggression because I fully realize that there are probably as many definitions of dominance aggression as there are disciplines who study behavioral problems in dogs. And also with the knowledge that there is no agreement on what the term aggression means, let alone dominance aggression. Now, if someone had blindfolded me and just read me the study and didn't name the authors, I could have told you right off the bat that the study, more likely than not, came from someplace other than the United States and possibly North America. And the reason I say that is because the study concluded that one factor in whether or not dogs developed dominance aggression, as they defined it, was the owner's relationship with the animal. The relationship with the animal simply isn't a part of the teaching process that comes out of behaviorism and psychology and which forms the basis of animal training in this country. It's simply not there. So consequently, if someone is talking about the role of the relationship, and particularly if those people are coming from the academic community, more likely than not, they have to be coming from somewhere other than this country. Having said that, though, and surely no surprise to followers of this podcast or my commentaries, that the relationship plays a role is no surprise to me whatsoever. Of course it does. In fact, I find that the less exposure my clients have to training in this country, the easier it is for them to make changes. And I think about this a lot. And as we know, I think about a lot of things a lot. But now that I'm into massive transplanting and garden work, I have a lot of time to think while I'm playing in the dirt. What happens when the relationship is removed from the process of teaching? And let me pause here to say that I don't think that the relationship was removed for any particularly devious reason. I think it was removed simply because, from a scientific point of view, it was a very sensible thing to do. Because as soon as you start including the relationship between the owner and an animal in a study, you add a tremendous number of variables and make things very, very messy. On the other hand, if you deny that the relationship plays any role at all, then you can focus strictly on the effects of your treatment in behaviorism, whether the reward or the punishment works. The problem with this is something that Hippocrates mentioned many years ago, when he said that faith in the patient's ability to heal the self is paramount, followed by faith in the physician, with faith in the treatment coming in third. When we're dealing with problems with our animals, be they medical or behavioral, we can add another step to that. So not only do we need to have faith in ourselves and in our ability to heal, but we also need faith in our animals' ability to heal themselves too, followed by faith in any professional we've turned to for help, and then the treatment. When you eliminate the human factor from a training method, what happens is that all of the faith then becomes focused on the treatment, because that's all that's left. The owner plays no role. The animal plays no role. The trainer, behaviorist, plays no role. All that matters is the treatment. There is no relationship except with the reward or with the punishment. So if the treatment doesn't work, you're up the creek without a paddle. And that's what happens. If the reward doesn't work, or if the punishment doesn't work, then we apply the get a bigger hammer approach, and we go for more yummy treats, or we turn up the shock on the collar, or we switch from a rolled up newspaper to a heavy magazine or something else. And the reason we do that is because that's all we can do if we deny the role of the relationship. But if we recognize the role of the relationship, then that opens a whole new set of options. The problem is that those options are highly specific. Now, from the point of view of the animal and the owner, the idea of a specific set of options is rather appealing. You know, it'd be like me going into a clothing store and finding everything that's there is in my size, but the styles are different. Some of them I have no interest in whatsoever, and others are exactly what I'm looking for. So from that standpoint, from the standpoint of the owner and the animal, that's cool. That's a real advantage. However, from the standpoint of the, what I like to think of as the facilitator in this process, be that an ethologist or a trainer or a behavioral consultant, that complicates things, because that means you need to know and understand that person as well as you know and understand that animal. In addition to that, you need to know and understand the relationship between them. And that's difficult. That's really difficult. It takes time. It takes energy. It takes commitment. It's a lot easier just to say reward or punishment.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.